Hello, and welcome to Crit Club, a podcast where four friends emerge unscathed from the biological horrors of 1966, ready to bear witness to the birth of a technocracy brave enough to fire wave after wave of young people into the meat grinder of human progress. My name is Wizard Chris, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Angela.
Oh, we used to have humor. We had to have a lot of humor.
Peter Allen Clark.
I'm still laughing all the way around the moon. Thank you for having me, Wizard.
My pleasure. And Corey.
Hi, I'm Corey. The writing of those two sentences of your intro, I think, were better than a lot of the writing in this movie.
There was writing in this movie?
I would just like to say that each of my co-hosts would make a fine astro bullet for the space gun. This week we watched the 1936 science fiction film Things to Come, a visually impressive collaboration between the legendary writer H.G. Wells, producer Alexander Korda, and director-designer William Cameron Menzies. The film features performances from Ralph Richardson, Cedric Hardwick, and famous Canadian Raymond Massey, who portrays man of science slash future Elon Musk fanboy slash blue checkmark subscriber, John Cabal. The film begins in the halcyon days of 1940, where the people of every town enjoy the last good Christmas for at least 30 years. And like that other piece of media about the end of the world, we witness both the apocalypse and the post-apocalypse as the forces of science and progress battle with the savage instinct of the human animal, and generations of characters emote against impressive backdrops in order to ultimately conclude that, well, what's the value of a human life anyway? You might be able to tell that I had some opinions about this film, but I must needs first hear from my fellow survivors. Was Things to Come a terrifying vision of future past? Or did its grim dooms and prophecies fall on deaf ears? Angela, what'd you think?
Ooh.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to go first because I have so many weird feels about this movie. First off, I had no idea what was going on through the first three-fourths of this movie, nor did I care.
There were multiple times when I watched it with Frida, but there were multiple times when I yelled out to the screen with her in the room, "What the hell is going on?"
I would say 5 minutes, I made a very conscious choice to just not give a shit. Like, but not in a bad way. Like, I'm not having fun. I'm just like, I'm just going to see where this goes. Because I found it really fascinating just in terms of this was a film that was made in 1936 that is thinking about what is the future going to be like. And watching how that plays out and reveals what is the mindset of the people writing this film and making this movie. And some of that mindset is horrible colonialist bullshit and white nationalist shit as well. And it's deeply disturbing, and which also noticing that made me also take further steps of distance in order to like try to be able to like look at this from a human perspective rather than like a cinematic storytelling perspective. And I found it really fascinating, except for that this movie relies way too much on false dichotomies, like the all or nothing thinking in this. It goes to Olympic levels, and so it's really hard to take this film seriously. But at the same time, so much of the stuff that happens in this movie are things that our parents experienced, things that we are experiencing even right now. And I would venture to say that right now many of us are wondering what the next 60 years are going to look like, and that we are on the precipice, on the cusp of major changes that are going to dictate what the world will be like. And coming with that are a whole bunch of fears. And I feel like this film is very much rooted in the fears of people in 1936. And I think that comparing our fears now to the fears that people had then just adds some context in terms of what we're experiencing right now. And I found that absolutely, I found it valuable, and I'm still cogitating over it. And also the special effects in this movie, like the scene making towards like three-fourths of the way into the film, some of that scene making and special effects make this film absolutely worthwhile to watch and to compare to other sci-fi films in the future. So as much as this is a cringe factory and so much of it is kind of unwatchable, I found it a really interesting movie to watch, and I'm excited to hear what the rest of you think. And I'm excited because I'm going to watch Inception tonight, and I feel like I'm having a sci-fi double feature today. So, yeah.
This podcast is happening in your dream.
It's a podcast within a podcast within a
within
podcast.
Within a podcast.
Peter, what feelings did Things to Come incept in you?
Gross ones. yeah, I didn't have a great time. This is a difficult one to kind of look at it through the view of history, because I don't feel like I've got a strong understanding of sort of like science fiction, speculative fiction, filmmaking around this time, especially around like effects. You know, King Kong was in like 1933. And so this is coming a little bit after that. And so there's some like sort of filmmaking bona fides that I found. That's probably the thing I enjoyed most about this movie, was looking at it as an artifact of history through this in 1936. Thematically, story-wise, I hated it, but like I think a way of talking about hating it is, have you all read Lord of the Flies?
Sure.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I had never read it until like maybe 2017 or 2016 or something. And I kind of knew the story basically. And so I'm reading through it and I'm like, wow, what a fascinating, what an actual rich, amazing book. And then at the fucking end is like the, and I'm not sure if you remember this, it's the weirdest fucking thing where they're saved by British civilization.
Oh, let's like, say Mo.
No, but it's like the I didn't realize that the whole thing of Lord of the Flies was about, and this is why, and I'm sorry, and this is why we need to have British civilization carried through the world, otherwise men would worship dead pig skulls. Like the whole thing is like a really fucking gross colonialist fable, basically, and that's precisely what I felt about this movie. Is like this is a movie that is pitting order and order against the rabble, right? With necessitating like the reason at the very end, to skip ahead, that we have to keep progressing is so we are not animals, which you said it, Angela, which is like just not a dichotomy that's a black and white thinking that doesn't really bear out on any sort of like, you know, time spent thinking about it, I guess, in my mind. And also this movie's fucking fascist, right? And this movie is like weirdly like this, you know, despite the fact H.G. Wells was a socialist apparently, like there's still like there's a benevolent dictatorship around all of it, but this like severe dedication to order against the rabble of, you know, of like the dystopianism, but also of like the artistic sculptor working against, like raising up the rabble against the space gun. Like, fuck this movie. Like, but also going just a bit into it and like, what is this movie trying to say? I don't think this movie knows. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this movie has cares really too much about like subtleties, you know, context, like understanding. Like the town is every town. And I think that tells you just about as much about like the subtleties of thought that this movie's trying to provide. And yes, it's early filmmaking, but I mean, great novels have been around for centuries and nothing's stopping this writer from making this a more captivating story. So yeah, nah, I'm okay. Like this was but also I think there's like three movies in one, none of which were flushed out. And I was like, oh, what is this long, this very long scenes of the progress of humanity, and I'm like, oh man, we still have fucking 25 minutes to go in this movie.
Those were the Koyaanisqatsi moments. I really enjoyed those. Mm-hmm. Just machines machining.
I was bored and I skipped a little bit. They were good. They were interesting.
I was relieved. Yeah. I was relieved not to have any more scenes. I was like, oh look, this is pretty to look at, and actually like almost like collages, cinematic collages of human progress, which actually reminded me of things that are happening now, like the minimalist style. I didn't like that it really focused so much on making everybody the same.
Well, yeah,
but anyway, I don't want to get too deep.
Yeah, one last point. I'm sorry, I've gone long, but it's the emphasis on order over everything else, and there's also like this notion of progress. Like, you know, H.G. Wells may have considered himself a socialist, but this notion of progress is an inherently capitalist idea. Like, more, you know, it is like progress. The next year better be 0.3% better, or 3% better, or you know, everything's gonna go to shit. And this like. Hmm. This inherent belief that this movie has that this is the way forward is just unexplored, very much assumed, and kind of deeply like, I just didn't connect to it because it didn't connect with this movie. Glad to watch it. Thanks. Goodbye.
Cool. Corey, what did you think of Things to Come? Did you love it, or do I need to get the peace gas?
Thank you.
I have a theory that H.G. Wells, who was 70 years old at the time of writing this movie, was just kind of like, guys, I'm tired. Can we just stop all the things? I also, I'm pretty sure that, you know, I don't know a bunch about him, but I think he must have like written longhand because there's no way that he could use a typewriter with those ham fists of his. Like,
hey-o,
I have not.
Got him.
I've actually not read much H.G. Wells. I haven't read any H.G. Wells, honestly. I don't know much about him other than like his sort of mythical standing as, you know, a science fiction writer and you know, breaking a lot of ground in science fiction and stuff. But man, this was ham-fisted. And Peter, the book that it made me think of was did Miss Miller ever make you read Serum? In high school English class.
Yeah.
So by Serum, Rutherford?
Serum is this giant tome of a novel that tells the story of England through successive generations of people. And so there are people that show up in each of these generations that have characteristics of... So, you know, the person that's a redhead in the 1800s is basically the same character as the redhead in Viking times and all that stuff. And so, I don't know, it made me think of Serum for some reason because, you know, we have these multiple generations of people that are basically the same character. I didn't hate watching this movie, but it's not a good movie. I agree with Peter. It feels very first drafty. It feels like he had like sort of these ideas and like these like placeholders for like where he wanted to put stuff. I quite enjoyed the old timey special effects stuff because, you know, you could really see the cracks in it, and like you can see, those are little toys that they're playing with, and like, but you don't know if that's a 12-inch toy or, you know, a 3-foot-tall toy or whatever. And so it's kind of like interesting to see them doing that, and watching those like scenes were some of the like most fun for me, just knowing when this was made and like seeing like, you know, how they really did this stuff with practical effects and all that stuff back in the day. I think the movie starts off really strong. I think that introductions, like where you're in this like tight town square and all that with like the war is coming and all that stuff. I was getting a little hyped, but then the quote unquote characters show up and everything just starts to like drag down. And at one point during one of those like long 20 minute, like, you know, interludes, I asked Frida, is like, there are characters in this movie, right? Are there people in this? Like, it's such an odd movie.
There are archetypes in this movie.
I guess so. It almost feels like there were two different, like, filmmakers or something. The ones that were sort of doing these little boring stage play sound set, you know, shot things with actual people. And then the ones that were doing the big set set pieces and all that stuff. And I quite liked, you know, the set piece stuff. I thought it was, like, a lot of fun, and I don't know, it was cool to watch, but yeah, at the end of the day, I think that there was nothing about the moon until the very end, and then that seemed like to be a big deal, and like if they wanted to make like progress seem like a bad thing, then maybe like show how we were like losing our humanity or something, but it just
but I don't
like...
think they wanted to show progress as a bad thing, and that's why it felt totally weird. Like,
yeah, I guess so.
I was like, that's because I was with you. I was like, are they trying to make progress seem like a bad thing? And at the end, I'm like, no, I guess they're not. But they kind of wanted to.
But then like the other guy, that like his thing is just like, guys, we're all just tired. We're kind of lazy. Can we all just like take a break? that's a pretty simplistic view of the opposition if you're, you know, a socialist or whatever. I don't know. I'm glad that I watched this movie, so I'm glad that you picked it, Wizard. What did you think of it?
Yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, so I kind of stormed past the why did I pick it, and I do want to come around to that, because I did want to kind of have this discussion about things to come, not just in terms of, like, the movie itself, but, like, how science fiction is, like, a reflection of present times and fears about the future and, you know, all of that fun stuff that comes up when you talk about science fiction or speculative fiction or whatever. And I'm also enjoying our little tour through, like, the silver screen. I love getting to, like, check out these artifacts of film. I think this is a great companion piece to Thief of Baghdad. We have, like, mm-hmm. we have our sci-fi and our fantasy.
I was going to mention it, the second mention of Basra in movies that we've had. Yeah.
And so, you know, I was interested to kind of see what we could do with that conversation, what we could do with this movie. I hated this movie. I find this movie offensive. I find it so, I am so angry. Not that it exists, but, like, the message, this is the message that a lot of people have sort of taken from speculative fiction from this time period and just kind of run with it and been like, let's just, like, stride boldly into this, like, mechanized, like, this mechanistic, like, technology obsessed future where we reject, like, the inconvenient parts about being human, I guess. Like, I really hated this dichotomy that the film creates between, like, what do we say at the end? We say, which will it be? Will it be the infinite universe and the great stars beyond, or nothing? And I'm like, nothing? What do you mean nothing? Like, guys, there is not a single plant in the last third of this movie. There are no plants.
They are underground.
They are underground. Well, because us fools built above ground so that we could get sunlight. We didn't know that technology would provide perfectly excellent sunlight. It's just like this horrific vision of the future that doesn't know. Like, it's just like it's. It creates this, like, grim, sterile future that I feel like a lot of people, like, I complained in the intro about the blue check marks and Mr. Musk, and this is exactly the kind of, like, grim, horrible, anti-human future that guys like that want, you know? Like, even, like, this obsession with classical art that we see in the far future of 2034. We're just, like, playing the hits, making big Art Deco statues that, like, don't mean anything to anybody. I hated this movie. I hated the false dichotomy between, like, order and progress, and everyone else is just a violent warmonger. But then the movie invalidates its own thesis by being like, we also don't value human life all that much, because it's stupid and dumb to die for a flag and the state, but it's super smart to die for the flag and the state if the state is science. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yep. So cool. Agreed. So cool. Fuck this movie.
I'm delighted.
I don't understand. Like, this is some old man shit is what this is. H.G. Wells is dead a decade after this movie comes out. Mm-hmm. This is some old man, like, young people will be willing to die for a better future, right?
Have you guys read H.G. Wells?
No. I've seen various adaptations. And, sure. Like, I am like, you know, and so I feel comfortable saying that he is informed. I feel completely comfortable saying that his, like, science fiction is informed by a lot of the science fiction around the turn of the century. There is weird colonial stuff splattered all over it. Even the way that the characters in this film, these, like, benevolent dictators of the future, talk about the planet. They talk about, like, ripping resources from the Earth. And after we've ripped all the resources from the Earth, we'll conquer space. And then we'll conquer everything else. I'm like, this is a terrible future. This is some 40K Warhammer shit. Like, And we're supposed to treat this as inspiring. And it is the exact opposite for me. It is this, like, anti-human, like, tech-obsessed, like progress obsessed vision of the future that is like, well, if we just, again, if we just like sacrifice people on the altar of progress, it's going to work out great eventually. This is the lie that this movie sells and that we continue to like be fooled by even today. This is a bad movie, not in that it's badly made. It's actually visually very like compelling. Mm-hmm. The bombing scenes, especially at the beginning of the film, when every town is bombed, super visceral. I was like legitimately moved by some of those like explosions, some of the effects work.
I think the editing in those scenes were also, it was just banger editing.
So
just
good.
Like bam, bam, bam. It was just like, oh, I was really in it.
So good, yeah, and really terrifying. Like even though it is so on the nose, the beautiful golden child crushed under all that rubble actually got to me. I was like, oh shit. And all that's great, you know. It's an amazing technical achievement. The weird, the cool sci-fi sets of the future. The weird Art Deco stuff was awesome. Like these are impressive set design, impressive filmmaking. But the message is so like, is so deeply toxic and antithetical to like me as a person, like my like worldview and like my vision of like a utopian future. That I'm like, fuck this, like all the way, fuck this.
I think even more so than just for me, it was just like a lack of a story to even latch on to. So my quibbles with its actual morality, like I didn't know who any of these people were. I didn't know what any of them wanted. I didn't know what any of them were trying to do really until they started like becoming like cartoon characters of versions of themselves and stuff.
That's the
and,
thing, right?
And then like as soon as you get
character
like attached,
story.
Yeah, and then as soon as you get like attached to somebody, then it's just like we're just like jumped out like 100
yeah, I mean,
years
like,
in the future, and I don't know. I didn't care
I mean,
about
like,
anybody.
I didn't get that sneaky sense of exactly what Wizard's saying. Wizard, I agree with everything you were saying. Until like halfway through. Whenever the sleep, the gas of peace,
the peace gas.
And then the guy says, starts wings over the world, and this is how I see the things going, and I'm like, oh shit!
At one point,
because
they
also,
refer to him as
like,
an air dictator.
Yeah, like I mean, also this it did strike me, and I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt Wizard if
oh,
you
go,
still have
go,
more
go,
to say.
Yeah,
yeah. But like, it did really strike me that this is 1936. Like, this is, you know, 4 years before. I don't know if I've got those dates right. Before the bombing,
this would be three years before
yeah,
things get hot
like,
in the UK.
Yikes! Like, right exactly there, and kind of exactly the way they're showing. And I found that to be like really, pretty striking.
Mm-hmm.
Scary. But I, because I was with you, Corey, for that first bit, because I was like, wait, who is the enemy and why is the enemy and who are these people and what? And then there's the sickness.
Yeah.
Wandering.
That just happens for about 5 minutes and then it stops.
Yep. But they mentioned it a couple times.
I'm like, oh God, like, are there zombies now?
Well, fortunately, their policy of killing everyone with the wandering sickness eliminated the wandering sickness. It's smart. It's
smart,
good
right.
public policy.
Which, just make them die from war. You already had the war. You didn't need this weird thing that you just bring up and then drop. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, think about it. Actually, I mean, if this is 1936, this is only 18 years after World War One. At the end of World War One, they did have the Spanish flu, which killed a lot of people. And so it does seem to make sense to have this pestilence. I just found having that whole illness thing in there just reinforce everything I've been thinking about with COVID lately. Even though COVID seems to have wound down quite a bit, like we're only just beginning to figure out just how much we've gotten fucked up. I mean, just talking to some of my friends lately, I can just tell it's still around in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why someone would think to put that in the movie, but it's also like, you're just convoluting your story and making things even more confusing. And I don't know.
it's
a weird
it's broad, it's broad strokes, right? Like it's things to come. Like in this century, we will experience biological disaster and war and the horrors of technology run amok, but differently, in a bad way, not in the good way, like the space gun will be or whatever. I did enjoy the Mad Max 1960s section, even though I found it super boring. Again, set design
really boring.
Was really boring. You're like, how is this post-apocalypse so boring? But like the talk with the dude about the car being pulled by the horse. They're like, oh yeah, no, when I was a kid, this thing ran on gas, but no gas, so now it gets pulled by a horse. Like, just little. It's 36. I'm impressed with like the work that they did to create this world. And I could even say that I'm on board with the movie, because I'm like, oh yeah, okay, like it's now we've had some kind of post-apocalypse and now we're doing this. It really is like the last third of the movie. It is all the far future stuff that made me just like,
yeah.
Like, this is fascist shit. This is like authoritarian. Yep. This is authoritarian technocratic shit.
Authoritarian. I hesitate to use the word fascist, but definitely they authoritarian.
Why do you hesitate? Like, honestly, I'm actually curious why you would hesitate to call it fascist.
I mean, fascist. What? I mean, that's become like a blanket word, but I mean, it's also a specific thing of like hyper nationalist and like anti like minority and like all that stuff. Like,
that's fair.
I see it
as being like authoritarian and dictatorial.
I understand fascism as just like order in the extreme, like order before above everything else. But also, to your point, they did refer to it as a new world order, an order for the new world, I believe is what they say.
There is a line
later on of like, he created our great white world.
Yeah.
It is also a line.
Is that just like an expression, or was that
I took that as an expression.
I don't think so.
But it's still fucked up. It's still fucked up to associate white with purity and
well, yet this is full of white people.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, sure,
there's
exactly. And
I was gonna Google that, but then I'm like, no, I don't actually want to Google that phrase. So one phrase that I did hear in this that I looked up and I'm like, oh, that's a good phrase to keep in the back pocket is the devil takes the hindmost. And I was like, oh,
that's a good one.
I'm like, what does that mean? It's basically like, yeah, like people moving in a pack, you expect the stragglers to die because
whoever
it's
falls
like,
behind.
We have to keep moving
behind.
Forward and screw the people who can't take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So devil takes the hindmost. Good expression.
Yep. But it was interesting. I mean, like, even throughout the talk of wanting, like, with the peace gas, whatever, I mean, there was still
peace
so
gas.
Much of this. Like, it is really interesting because so much of this comes out of a post-World War I Great War mindset. And I mean, like, even all of the talk about peace is militarized.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the phrase aggressive peace is used. Like, you know, the peace gas bombs or whatever. Like, there's no, you know, conflict is inherent even if it's, you know, to create stability or to promote stability.
Yeah, and I'd almost think this was, like, satirical, but that's not the tone.
Not at all.
Not a
pointedly humorless movie, actually.
Yes.
And so, I mean,
what is humor? Oh, that's a thing for other movies.
Oh, fuck, you're so right. Yeah, no, we used to laugh because we suffered so much. What a British thing to, what a British take on humor. So, there's no story really. Well, there's a story loosely to speak of. It is the story of humanity. After an extended war, the city of Everytown falls into chaos and disrepair. It experiences.
Which I just have to say, I laughed when I thought it was just like hypothetical Everytown. But then when someone halfway through the movie comes up and says, "I'm from Everytown," I was like, "Oh,
I was born in Everytown." Yeah.
I cracked up. I thought it was
us, man. What is this?
Yeah,
no
right.
one's from here. Everytown is ravaged by plague. It's ravaged by, or it's it falls under the post-war dictatorship of the first guy to realize you can just shoot sick people to keep them from spreading sickness.
And they we call him the boss.
The boss. Which I liked. I liked that because I could see, like, in a crumbling post-apocalyptic future, like the boss. It's a good name for a Fallout villain. More on that later. And our friend John Cabal, who happens to be away from Everytown during all of this because he is flying. He is flying in the war. He crash lands, and I guess.
And then just gets arrested? Like, these are the rules now? It's like, if you just, if you come into our territory, you're automatically arrested? I don't know.
Well, because they're dumb, right? They're, like, dumb warmongers. Yeah. And also, the boss needs gas. Like, so John Cabal disappears for an extended period of time. During that time, he seems to be absorbed into some kind of New World Order.
And he becomes a bunch of
nerd order. And he becomes a promoter of like air. Okay, we're not going to say air fascism. We're going to say air authoritarianism. Air authoritarianism.
Air dictator.
He returns to Everytown in the first plane that anyone has seen in forever. And the primitive warlord who runs Everytown is like, I'm going to take your plane.
And throw you in jail.
Just an aside, when John Cabal, played by Raymond Massey, steps out of that plane in his cool 30s space suit, I was like, I can't believe this design didn't take off, man. This is cool. You look cool.
I was like, yeah, this is some good 1930s futurism right here.
Yeah, you look like the background dancer in like a David Bowie concert circa
Station or something.
We having a
I think I saw that design in the Around the World video.
So good. John is here to observe Everytown, I guess forcibly get some regime change going if need be.
This is actually kind of funny when he comes into town and the guy's like, you're arrested. He's like, yeah, we'll get to that later. It's like, no, you're arrested. He's like, yeah, all in good time.
It turns out that's how that works. You just have to confidently continue doing what you're doing. And then from there, there's like plots to like the whole middle of the movie really doesn't like matter all that much. Like it's an attempt to put some like character drama into the film, but all we're really like experiencing is like the forward, like we're the point of the movie is to just get us to the far future where progress wins. All these violent dullards have been pacified and life is better for people, but also, like, well, again, and there are no plants.
Yeah, and I had my notes.
Lives underground.
I had my notes at two different places. After all the war stuff happens, I was like, oh, like, most movies would have just started here. And then when they get to the other, like, future part, it's like, oh, most movies would have just started here. And I think that's kind of the you know, problem with this movie. It feels very disjointed. I did also laugh when they threw him in jail and like he goes, it's just like a really quick thing, but he goes and like wiggles the bars in the window.
I saw that
and they actually wiggle really loosely.
I saw that. I laughed at that too. Oh,
it's like, dear. Oh man, a lot of attention to detail in this set, but not on the bars.
Not on the bars. I don't know. They're all just so dumb. And so I think the important part of the film is really the last part of the movie. Like that is we see an end to these.
Sorry, is an hour in. The last part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like the most.
It's a 90 minute.
Just to reiterate.
No, absolutely. It's a 90 minute movie. Only the last half hour is actually important and like contains like the message and the bulk of the film and the thing that makes me so angry.
At some point, Frida was like moving or said something that like indicated that she was going to get like thinking about getting ready to get up and do something else. And I was like, oh, no. And I grabbed the remote and clicked it. It's like, we have another 37 minutes left.
So we witnessed this march of progress, like the warlords are cast aside, the wings over the worlds. Yeah, that's the name of the organization, this air dictatorship, New World Order.
Hey, you know what? Wow. You know what that is shortened?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
Wow. We see progress, and then we rejoin everybody in the year 2034, where we are preparing to send people, where technology has made life better. People don't really remember what humor was, and I realize I'm harping on this, but there are no plants anywhere.
The no humor guy, the grandpa, who the great grandpa,
yeah.
Who's that guy? Who's he?
Doesn't matter.
I have no idea. And it kind of doesn't, because even if he is a character from the 60s era part of the movie, like who cares? Like, who were any of those characters? I only know John Cabal because he, I'm going to spend the rest of my life drawing, like, John Cabal, like, propaganda posters, like, satirical things, because I just hate it so much.
Yeah, I mean, there's basically him, and then there's the lead lazy guy, I don't want to do anything guy.
Lead lazy guy who, like, hates progress, yeah.
And I just wish that he was a better character, like, of all the other people. Like, you know, I don't know. He's just so uninteresting and so, like, it's such a kindergarten socialist, like, take on the opposition, basically.
See, I don't agree with that. Like, I think that his question, if we're talking about the same guy, like, he's like, when will humankind rest? Now, I want to stress that everyone says mankind all the time and talks about man, capital. Yeah. And the one, like, strongly written, if you can call it that, female character in the movie expresses her desire to be a man.
I wonder if that is actually a quality of being a woman, is wanting to be a man.
I don't know. Is that commentary, though? I mean, is that at least commentary of them, like, in the 1930s, kind of realizing that there is inequality and that people can go, like humanity can go to waste if you're not empowering, you know, half of them and stuff. Like
I don't think so, because I think she says the reason she wants to be a man is because you have no idea how active us women are or something. Like, she kind of talks about
our wild imaginations.
Right. And I think she's saying uteruses. If she were a man, she would have a stronger constitution when it came to mental facilities.
Oh, I thought it was that she would be able to do so much if she was allowed the societal power that men have. Yeah. That's how I took it.
I think both of them is how I heard it.
But. Yeah, like, it's muddled, right? Because the movie is muddled. But, like, in the far future, we see that men and women seem to be on some kind of equal standing because, like, there is this woman who wants to be shot out of the space gun, and no one has any beef with that. So cool. But so this character, this like anti-progress character, says, like, will mankind ever rest? Will we ever rest? Will there ever be enough progress? And it's a good question. And it's not.
It is a good question.
It is a good question, because, like, what does progress, like, look like? Like, this movie's vision of progress is, like, let's keep, like, breaking things and challenging things and pushing technology forward. A sandal on every foot. But
Those were ugly sandals.
Yes, they were.
And I gotta just say, like, the practicality of capes all the time, I don't think it's gonna come back. Like, they're just not practical.
I have
only the
capes.
British could make those sandals, like, a thing for the future, because only the British wear them.
But, like,
and
my
it doesn't
thing
work.
Is, my thing is,
I want to hear these, it, Richard.
This movie, like, this is going to be tricky. There's no internal world in this future.
Right.
There's no spiritual development. There's no, like, reckoning with what it means to be human. It is, well, humans are, like, an extension of progress, which is why it's totally fine that we blow ourselves up in the pursuit of progress. There's no value, like, ultimately, there's no value in humanity in this vision of the future. There's no time to rest and navel gaze and, I don't know, have a soda and fart in front of your friends and, like, be human. Like, this movie hates humanity in its, like,
again,
earthy grossness. And
I'm going to say
boo.
This is Lord of the Flies. It's because, like, if we don't progress, we are animals. Like, that is the whole thing of Lord. Like, that's where I rest on this. I agree with you completely.
And this, like, childish vision that humanity still suffers from, that the only way we can really, like, prove ourselves and make our dad proud is by going to space. Like, fuck
I'm sorry,
you.
It also shot out of a huge phallus.
There are some great lines in this. Raymond Massey looks up from the pilot who is being gassed, and he says, "How long will we continue murdering each other?" But my favorite, and possibly the first piece of Crit Club merch, should simply be "To the space gun."
Yeah. I wrote down until this whole space gun business, like, cause that was the first like mention I think of it was just the phrase space gun business.
This and my damn ears space up. Gun business.
Yeah. And like here, I just wish there was some, like they should have seeded this idea even way back in the first act of the moon or space exploration or some, because it comes out of nowhere and then all of a sudden it's the most important thing.
It's the most important thing. Yeah.
And, and like everyone has to rebel against it and all that. And so it's just like,
wait, maybe it's a bad movie. Maybe it's a really bad movie.
I think it just takes for granted that if you are watching a science fiction film from H.G. Wells in 1936, you have some vague notion of like exploring the stars as like a thing that we're shooting towards, so to speak. The film accurately describes multi-stage rockets, even though they do call it a space gun. That was cool. But yeah, there's this like, at the final third of the movie, I thought there was going to be this tension between that kind of like earthy humanity and this like slick, gross future, because the sculptor, Theoctopolis, is the guy who's like, when will we rest? Is this not enough? Like, I was trying to figure out what it means in Greek. The Theo is God. We'll figure it out later. But I thought there was going to be this tension because I thought the movie was going to kind of pivot and be like, but too much progress or like unfettered technological progress is actually a bad, like you got a bad thing. Like we need to nurture the spirit and humanity and all that stuff. And then I remembered it's 1936 and no one writing science fiction in the 30s seems to give a shit about anything other than shiny toys and technology. It's such like a fucking childish boys club of like, more toys. We want more toys to, again, so that we can escape the bonds of gravity and punch the face of God and get back at all of our dads. That speech at the end is just like weird, like techno. No, I'm going with this weird techno-fascist crap. Don't let Alex Jones see this movie.
I feel like I feel like I was reading Sam Bankman-Fried's like lost emails that came out in the trial or something.
Elon Musk's screenplay. It's like, it's going to be really good. It's about a really smart guy and no one understands him.
Has anyone read Canticle for Leibowitz?
No, you've recommended that before.
Okay. It's great. It's like a 1962 sci-fi book that also takes this tack of zooming forward for a couple generations of human progression. And I think it's a stunningly good book. Very incredibly good speculative fiction, and does way more than this movie has ever done. For me personally,
what do you guys think progress looks like?
Is that a question? Is that a real question?
That's a real question. Okay. We seem to disagree on this one, on this movie's idea of progress. What does progress look like?
Well, I mean, but it's really interesting because this, like, and Angela, I'd really love to hear sort of your takes on this because this movie sets up I think you were the first person to say it, of dichotomies of like, it's either progress or chaos, right? Like progress is the response to chaos. And if we don't have the progress, we have the war, and out of war must come the chaos. And I feel like there's this incredible fear, which I think is valid after what Europe and, you know, has went through in the first part of, well, all of the 20th century. But I mean, it's super valid fear of like combating this fear with like this rush towards that sort of ordered progress. And I think like I personally have a different view like that, like this movie's fears I don't connect with because they all seem very universal, like not only for our time, at least as I feel, but just for all time, like forever. Everyone has always been concerned about instability and disorder and chaos and the other, you know, kind of threatening their own home life, and so like this movie's idea of progress seemed very much sprung out of that culture, which I think is like seemed very historically accurate to me.
I think for me, in terms of like this false dichotomy thing, the only people who benefit from false dichotomies are the insanely wealthy and the people with power. And even today, I find it really difficult to watch how much is used to divide all of us, and that there are many shades of gray in every single situation, and we're never really encouraged to embrace that. And those shades of gray actually are the things that make us the most human, right? So we're constantly being pulled in ways to detach ourselves from our humanity so that we are disempowered, so that people with money and political power can get what they want. And it's just disheartening to me to see that this is a struggle that has been going on for, well, you know, well over 100 years now and thousands of years, and that we still kind of haven't quite figured it out, or and haven't transcended media portrayals that allow us to actually see each other a little bit more. And which is also why I'm excited that Civil War has just come out, and it just seems like we picked the best movie right now for just us now to talk about these things. I'm really thankful to Wizard about that. So I don't know if that's an actual direct response to your question or whatever, but this film made me think about all of those things.
I think I myself am also a black and white thinker in a lot of ways, which is, I'm sure, not shocking for me to say for those who know me.
Listeners, do you agree?
And so, yeah, part of me watching this is like, oh God, is this how I sound? Like, do I sound as insufferable as this? Because, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. Progress to me, like, I've had a real wild 2 months. The past 2 months, I read Joseph Campbell's first entry into his The Masks of God mythology series. That's like a takes anthropology and psychology. And the first volume was about primitive mythology, and it has like kind of turned my world upside down about tech and technology, because it's like, because our belief and our hype and our sort of like impetus towards wanting to believe that it is possible, I now kind of understand personally as an outgrowth of childhood thinking of, I want that to be so, and so that should be so. And like this kind of really sometimes damaging and immature sort of like line of thinking. And my view of progress is just continued bouts of kindness and empathy. Like, whether or not that includes technological advancements, you know? I mean, like, I think there are lots of technological advancements in progress that can be done through, like, accessibility and, you know, and all of these sorts of stuff like that. But I think progress to me has most been shown in human society over the past 500 years as the slow, stuttered, definitely not fast enough, like, crawl towards more empathy to each other.
It's interesting that you mentioned the childhood reaction like that.
Yeah, I said that really small. I've got a lot more to say about that, but yeah.
Well, because one thing that I have been thinking about is that a lot of us have been taking a very punitive approach to things that we find outrageous, which is in some cases quite appropriate. But I think we forget that just like children are only able to do certain things on a developmental scale, right? Our humanity can only do certain things based on their knowledge and response. And so when I watch things like this movie, I can't really get that mad at it for being what it is, because it's a product of its time, and expecting it necessarily to be different. I see you making that face. I'm not saying it shouldn't be different, but
that's
saying
me,
it's not surprising.
I was making that face.
I know. As you should, like, because, you know, that's not to say that we shouldn't be striving for real progress, right? For freedom and equality. But that's like, is that the world that we've actually inherited? And I don't know, I'm probably saying all sorts of like controversial shit at this moment.
No.
But, but I feel like we need to be gentler with ourselves as a society, and be aware that we are on a spectrum of growth, and that punishing each other and hating each other actually isn't going to change this world. However much it's more comfortable and empowering for us to feel that hate, that simple hate, so that we can feel like we can actually do something about these huge problems that are not so easily solved.
I mean, like, I agree with you completely that this is an outgrowth, and that's what I was saying earlier about, like, from the product, byproduct of the culture, not only in terms of the fear of post-World War I, but also, like, the two, you know, Nazi Germany and you know, communist Russia emerging from that, with Wells being a fan of, according to the Wikipedia article I was reading about it, like and went and interviewed Stalin and, you know, is like a supporter of, like, you know, Sovietism, like, but, you know, they both are authoritarian in their own way, and I would argue there is a take you could say that they were both responses to the massive amounts of chaos and disorder that swept across the continent in the you know, 40, 50 years previous to that. But also technologically speaking, I read a really good book once called The Vertigo Years. That's about 1900 through 1913 or 14. It's a history book of Europe in that time of, like, what was changing societally and culturally. And there was this huge amplification of technological advancements in that time of, like, the printing press of, I know that existed way before that, but, like, mass media started taking over, like, mm-hmm. newspapers, and also, like, the spread of the automobile and, like, dynamos. There was this, like, real love affair that seems also to have influenced the minds behind this movie as well. It's a good book. It's a very good book.
This is a good conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I think ultimately progress is being able to go outside and touch grass, which
there you go.
Not an option in things to come, but
hey man, like, Wizard, like, I think that's an excellent answer. Like, I think progress is understanding and fitting in time for humans to rest. And
yeah.
Understanding the
Let
importance
us rest.
Of that.
Let us commune together. Let us come together and do nothing and, like, enjoy each other's presences. This is such, like, a Protestant work ethic future that I swear to God, I would I would put my face right in front of the space gun and say, push the button.
Beam me, like, up, Daddy.
Daddy, I'm going to space.
I don't know if this was, like, an intentional thing to not have, you know, plants or whatever, or if this is just because it was a constructed set. I mean, they made this set and they just maybe forgot to include plants and stuff like that. But
and to be honest, I am exaggerating. The space gun appears to be in a forest. So every once in a while when they fire off the space gun, they, like, douse the forest in pollutants. Awesome.
So, and, like, the scene when the people are converging on the space gun and stuff, like,
that was very cool, very well done.
It was a cool scene, and, like, Frida's like, wow, that is so many extras, but I'm like, no, like, it's a little mechanized
They're
thing with, like,
yeah.
little toy people moving along the things and stuff, but, like, they just shot it, and it's like, I don't know, it's, that stuff is charming. Like, there's a lot of, like,
yeah,
the big
cool
set
effects.
Piece stuff here was really charming to me, but the story and all that stuff, it just wasn't. So.
You know what's funny about that, Corey, is, like, I just realized that it's, like, that there's an opening shot at the very beginning that kind of nods to its own use of miniatures, because mm-hmm. there's a boy looking through the Christmas window at miniatures, mm-hmm. like, in that. Cute. And I was like,
you know
what I
that
don't
is.
Know. What?
Inception.
Yes!
There we go. We made it back. We're coming for you.
We're
Tom
coming
Hardy.
Home, everybody. We're coming home. Anybody else have anything they want to say about things to come? Do you think Do you think that the two Astro people made it?
I'm scrubbing through this because I want to see, like, there's, like, this. I didn't write it down, so I'm trying to find it. Like, there's this monologue of when they go from the wings of world and explore all the giant possibilities of science. Like, there's this real a real dark fucking monologue.
Yeah, it sounds like a supervillain's monologue. Like,
we shall excavate
Raymond
the
Massey
eternal hills.
Plays
we
a
supervillain. Yeah, it's wild that I just wanted to, like, and everything is in order to be sacrificed for humankind's.
Will there
progress.
Ever be an age of happiness?
Yeah. That's all I got to say about things to come, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I guess it's time to roll. I'm about to take a punitive approach to this movie, but first we should probably explain how things work around here. Here at Crit Club, we rate the movies on a 1 to 20 scale in honor of the polyhedral D20. And if you're looking for a BBEG for your next campaign, Raymond Massey, John Cabal, and Wings Over the World sound about right.
I love it.
So let's bring it back around. Corey, what'd you think of Things to Come?
I think I hated this less than you all did. But that's not to say I liked it. I think I kind of just felt kind of meh about it. So I was kind of like teetering on like 9 or 10 for me, just kind of falling in the middle. So I think 9 sounds good to me. Let's go with 9.
Right on. Mm. Peter.
Yeah. Like I briefly flirted with, I think when I opened, this is the rare movie talking about it made me dislike it more. And I love when that happens. Cause I was briefly, I think I entered into this conversation with like a 7, but no, this is like the only thing, the only credence I'll give this movie is it's really, really charming special effects. I will say that. But that doesn't carry it through its many, many flaws to me. So I'm going to just round out with a 5. I think a 5 is like kind to my overall feelings of this movie, but I am glad to have watched it. This is like really a really interesting sort of like set piece of filmmaking history, but also just like European history as well. So 5 from me.
Angela, what do you think?
Oh, I'm taking it down, people. We're going, I'm giving it a good score because I think, Peter mentioned, it is a piece of cinematic history. And I think it's valuable as a historical document to kind of understand a point of view that may not necessarily exist in that form anymore. And that's not to say that it's a great film. I just think it's an important film. And I think more people should see it because I think it's caused all of us to question what progress should look like and what is important to being human. And I think for all of those reasons, it's a valuable film and I would encourage more people to watch it. It is kind of hard to watch because some of the dialogue and the
sound
scenes
quality.
Between people and the sound quality crap. But if you take a distanced approach to it and just allow yourself to use what's going on to make you think about what's going on now and history, that it's got value. And so because of that value, I am going to give it a 14.
Ooh,
interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. Before we get to other ratings, I didn't read up a whole lot on this, but there is a tag on the Wikipedia article on it of like a list of incomplete or partially lost films. And that's just a tag on it. I don't know if that's part of it. Like, I wonder if some of it was just lost or damaged through time.
So
and
this
that's kind
was,
of maybe some of the sounds.
This was a lost movie for quite a while. There was this edition that we got that we watched is like a restoration of like the last print and
that
some other stuff maybe that they've
audio.
Cobbled together. Like this was this does have like a pretty interesting history as like the film itself.
And this is also a very short cut. There are much longer
thank
cuts
God.
In this film.
What?
Yeah.
The what?
Yeah, hard to believe that this could be longer. It's only 90 minutes and yet somehow.
This feels like an age. Yeah.
An age of progress.
Wizard, what are you rolling for things to come?
So I agree with Angela. This is an interesting, important movie. I think it is. I would encourage people to watch this. I would say that it's a cool, that the effects are awesome. I want to check out more like London Films, Alexander Korda stuff, because we've seen Thief of Baghdad and we've seen Things to Come, and I'm curious to see what other special effects, high concept extravaganzas are there. But like any movie that's trying to be about something, and that something is how like we need to distance ourselves from our humanity and the earth that bore us, because progress matters most, is like anathema to me. And so I give this movie without hesitation. This is a 1. This is a critical
Whoa!
Fuck this.
Congrats. Congrats.
Check it out.
Hey,
watch
didn't
it.
I give?
Good movie.
Oh, that's great.
Good movie.
Nice to have another one.
I hate it.
Yeah, Wizard, you haven't had a 1 since Belladonna of Sadness, and that was your
also,
only one.
That
You've
was also
only
my
had a,
pick.
That was
I
also your pick, yeah.
I hate the movies I pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a 1. This is a failure on a number of levels. And like it invalidates itself by being like, these people don't care about life, but neither do we. So, this movie. Yeah, fuck it.
I love it.
Yeah, So, anyways, tell us what you thought of Things to Come. It is a thing that we did and we saw. You can reach out to us on the socials. We are on Blue Sky, which is super fun. I forget. I think we're
quickclub.bluesky.app.
Yeah, sweet. That is my most active social media platform. So hit us up on there and I might say hello. And so to Mike Corey. We're also on Threads. We can also be emailed at quickclubpodcast@gmail.com and other cool stuff. And that's it for Things to Come, which is awesome. Fuck this movie. What are we watching next? It's an Angela pick.
Oh, guys,
Angela pick.
Woo! I haven't fully decided because I seem to like this picking on during the show. So we have two choices, and there's a chance that maybe I'm surprised that neither of you have watched. Are any of you familiar with Near Dark, the 1980s Western horror movie?
Very familiar with it. Never seen it.
Oh my! It is my husband Chris Hockabout's favorite vampire movie. I know other people who like it very much, so
I'm
like
I'm sorry, it's Kathryn Bigelow. I have seen it. I'm sorry. It is very good. It's Kathryn Bigelow. I watched it on the Criterion Channel a couple of years ago. Yes, it is
Raider!
A movie. I'm very sorry.
This looks like it would have been fun.
It's fucking Kathryn Bigelow. She's an excellent filmmaker, and this is a very good movie.
I will watch it on my own then. Very exciting. Something on the Criterion Channel that I know for a fact that we will never choose. But
it's a forgettable movie. It's a forgettable title. You know, I'm going to forget
it. It's not a great title.
Yeah.
But
oh my God, okay,
good.
This is Strange Days Person.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to watch this now.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll watch it this week. We can talk about it next week, Corey, during what you're watching. But I have as a backup choice a French New Wave film from the 1970s. I'm very excited about this. I know you guys haven't seen it. It's called, wait for it, The Mother and the Whore. It's apparently like the French Annie Hall. I'm not going to give too many details.
That sounds so good right now.
Right? In French, it's called La Maman et la Putain. And it's an examination of the relationships between three characters in a love triangle. And it screened at the 1973 Cannes Film Festival, where it won the Grand Prix. So I think that this could be an amazing film for us to watch, especially important because we also watched another highly erotic movie from the 1970s in the realm of the senses. So I think it gives us an opportunity to
compare.
Oh, did you make that face? Yeah, because that's a bad movie. But interestingly, In the Realm of the Senses was produced by a French producer. So there might be some sort of connection there. So I think that's what we're watching. Is that what we're watching?
That sounds great. Do you know who also is in this movie? The first member of the cast? We're going to revisit our boy, Jean-Pierre Lourde of The 400 Blows. We watched him as a little baby boy, and now we're going to watch him in The Mother and the Whore.
Oh, it's that guy. Very exciting. Well, that's next week. So please watch along with us, The Mother and the Whore, so that, you know, send us an email next week. Tell us what you think. I mean, this should be a great film.
It's going to be great. I'm so excited. Some like earthy humanity, people with complicated internal lives. Fuck, it's great to be alive. And also French in the 70s, I guess. Anyway. That brings us to the final part of the show. Sometimes my favorite part of the show, sometimes not. It's a little segment called What Else You Watchin', where we talk about what else we're watching. And let's just go crazy. Peter, you've been the middle child for so long now. Time to step up.
Someone finally noticed me. I'll go quickly. I've had a real great week of queer cinema watching in two very special movies that are very different, but I've really fucking enjoyed the hell out of. One is a horror movie, and I even hesitate, like, it's a horror comedy, I guess is the way of calling it. It's on Shudder. It's called Summoning Sylvia, and it is where, you know, a queer bachelor party goes upstate New York for the weekend to a haunted house at a seance, and an uninvited guest tags along. I know nothing about this. I know nothing about the director. It's not scary in the slightest. Like, Angela, you should watch this movie, actually, I think. Like, it's not scary in the slightest. But it is so charming. Like, I know nothing about the directors or the writers. It looks like Wesley Taylor and Alex Wise both wrote and directed it together. But the actors are so fucking funny and have such great patter and chemistry between everyone that just the banter and the ease of the banter is just delightful. Like, I'm going to tell you, I've watched this movie twice already in the past week just to be around these boys, because I just find them so wonderfully charming. And I would say this movie's final 10 minutes maybe isn't exactly earned. I would have loved it if it had 10 more minutes to really earn that, but that's okay. But I still think this is a remarkably lovely movie that I'm excited to follow up with the filmmakers on. And then secondly, I did see Love Lies Bleeding. And let me tell you, the Kristen Stewart queer bodybuilder noir movie starring Ed O'Neill and Ed Harris in a really bad wig. That's a special movie. Like, the trailer, I saw the trailer and I was like, I like Kristen Stewart. I like noir movies. This seems like it could be a good vibe. That movie has got some things going on that I think make it rise well above what it should be. Love Lies Bleeding is a really good movie. It was, I think, co-written and directed by the woman who did Saint Maud. I don't know if you saw that, Wizard, the mm-hmm. horror movie that came out in like 2020. It's a good horror movie. But Love Lies Bleeding is just like a queer romance noir that has like a real specific sense of humor about itself, but also like specific tone and vibe. Fucking, I really liked that movie a lot. So those two movies were great, welcome, wonderful things for me. That's all.
Awesome.
Summoning Sylvia, Love Lies Bleeding.
That sounds about right. We could use a horror movie in this house that isn't horrifying.
It's definitely not scary in the slightest.
Corey, what else are you watching?
I got really nothing. This has been such a busy week. Any free time is playing Isaac and just doing more check marks and completions on that. But I did do a bunch of gardening and stuff lately. So I got, we're doing some
plants. Low on grass, progress.
Yeah. Plants.
Some trees.
Yeah, we're low on space, but I'm getting some more container stuff. So I've got some tight, compact dwarf varieties of figs, a cherry like kind of bush, and like a small compact blueberry that I just bought and planted. Ooh. So I'm excited for that stuff. But yeah, I honestly can't think of anything that I've even been watching lately.
Huh.
No.
Okay. Did I mention something, or are you just...
No, no, okay. I'm just surprised you always have such great picks.
Yeah, I'm blanking. This has been a really busy week.
Blueberries are a very good pick.
Yeah. He's custodian of the earth, and that's
literally the entire weekend, like making music, and that was all I did.
Hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Whoa! You should be promoting your song. That's what you should be promoting.
Maybe at some point.
Fingers crossed, everybody. Right. Angela, what else have you been watching?
Like Corey, I've been pretty busy in my garden. I added irrigation to my 16 roses with soaker hoses and covered them with compost and mulch, and I feel very accomplished. But I also read the book The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is all about bisexual visibility and glamorous 1930s and 40s Hollywood. Totally enjoyed it. I read it cover to cover in a day and a half. Hugely satisfying. You know, it's not like literature, but it is a good read all the same. I highly recommend it. Also, just watched the newest episode of Shogun, and you know, as Wizard keeps saying, and I can't say anything much because he hasn't seen it yet, I cannot find a single flaw with this series. I want the producers to keep making more stuff. It's the most satisfying series I've watched since early seasons of Game of Thrones. Really just great TV. And my album of the week is Krongbin's A La Sala, which just came out
Krongbin.
Last week. Yeah. So great. It is the summer album to have. Grab it now. They're going to be on tour. You'll want to see them. It is cocktail hour on an album. even if you don't drink. It makes it makes your non-alcoholic beverage taste a little more alcoholic. And that's what I'm watching.
What about you, awesome. Wizard? What are you watching?
Oh, a couple of things, I have already mentioned it a couple of times, I think, on the show. I've started watching Fallout, at least during this show. Fallout is a really enjoyable show. Strong recommend for anybody who's played the games, people who haven't played the games. It has just captured like the perfect like sense of humor. What is weird and gross and gory and fun about Fallout is it's all in there. And there's some really, really great performances. Really great performances in that show. I'm only on the second episode, and I'm kind of taking it slow. And it's just great. Watch Fallout. Experience the apocalypse. I started watching Outer Range, which is also on Amazon Prime. Anybody pick up Outer Range?
What is that?
Peter, I think you might especially enjoy it. So it is kind of like The X-Files and the show Dark meets Yellowstone. So
okay.
Josh Brolin plays like the patriarch of like a rancher family in like Montana or Wyoming. And they have drama, obviously. They have drama with their neighbors. They have internal drama. There's all kinds of drama. But the biggest drama, my favorite part, is the day that Josh Brolin discovers a giant black void in the middle of his pasture land.
Hell yeah.
And weird shit starts happening, and time is a flat circle, and shit is getting weird on the ranch. It also stars Imogen Poots and Lily Taylor, friend of the pod, Lily Taylor. and it's really, really... I've only watched the first episode, but it's a mystery box show, right? And I am usually ready to at least sign on for a mystery box show for at least one season to see what's going on, right? It has been renewed for a second season, and we'll see how that goes. But strong performances, really excellent like weirdness and like visual weirdness, and a really excellent sense of like tone and drama and cool shit.
Say it again. What's the title again?
It's called Outer Range.
Outer Range.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So definitely recommend people check that out. the Yellowstone stuff is, there's definitely the rancher family drama shit. Also going to shout out, I want to shout out this super fun game that I've been playing when work has gotten too much. It's called Traveler's Rest. It is basically Stardew Valley, but you run like a roadside inn in medieval times. So you're like making mead and brewing beer and like farming vegetables to make stews and fancy stuff for your customers. You're like running around cleaning tables and rousting rowdies. It's like, it's such a sweet, cute, fun game. It just like, I've been super stressed out lately. Work has been psychotic, busy and stressful. And this thing just takes all that off, just shaves off a layer of stress, and I love it. So Traveler's Rest. And lastly, I attended a listening party on Bandcamp like 2 days ago, which I'd never done before. It's super fun. It's just a chat room where people play an album and you all just like hang out and write inane shit to each other. But that album is the new record from the metal band High on Fire. The album is called Cometh the Storm, and it fucking crushes. This is like the Criterion Collection metalhead audience, I'm sure, is very like niche and tiny, but I recommend that those two folks, you've already pre-ordered Cometh the Storm. It crushes. High on Fire, one of the best bands playing metal today. Check it out. And that's what I got.
And also, I want to make sure I mention for listeners, because I usually find a chance to slot it in, but I didn't. There is a spreadsheet containing all of the movies that we have watched and the ratings that we gave them in your show notes that you can see. I usually find a way to sneak it in, and I didn't.
It's true. That's true. Y'all can check out my latest
one. You can see
one.
My five ones.
It's not a competition, Angela.
Black and white thinking.
It could be.
Just
anyways, that is it for us here at Crit Club. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for this episode. Thank you for watching Things to Come. If you watched it, if you didn't watch it, it's pretty cool, even though I hated it. Next week, we are going to be checking out a little Francais film.
The Woman and the Whore. Or the Mother and the Whore.
Yeah, The Mother and the Whore. And that'll be cool. Feel feelings. Touch grass. Progress. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.